part of the process of the transition involved public hearings in 1996 and a bit later, I guess, too, because there were some amendments to the SFU official community plan. Tell me about what you heard from the public about the OCP proposal. What impressed you about the inputs at the hearing?
Oh, boy. I'm just trying to think. That was so long ago. I'm just trying to think. Yes.
Well, perhaps
I was going to say that the OCP process for SFU, I was involved in it from the parks side and behind the scenes, you know, at the staff sort of level the planners and the staff at SFU and the city staff. And so that OCP process itself with the rezoning and the public input that was part of the OCP process, I wasn't per se directly involved in that component, where I am in things like the management plan for the part the Burning Mountain Conservation Management Plan public process. So the details of the public feedback I wasn't necessarily party to. So that's a hard question for me to answer specifically.
Okay, well, maybe I could give you an example because it leads into another question that members of the Burnaby Mountain Preservation Society were there. At the 2006 hearing, and Dean Lamont suggested that in recent years SFU has demonstrated a greater environmental sensitivity, that environmental concerns can be addressed, and that this proposal is a workable compromise. And Diane Hansen commented that the proposal will strengthen ties between the university and the community. And my question is, what infrastructure was put in place that supported those hopes?
Well, I think what happened was is that the form of housing, because when the OCP was being looked at, when we were planning for the neighborhood,
actually, was the OCP itself infrastructure that would allow that input?
Yes, because the form that it took, basically what you're doing is you're taking a university campus and its adjacent, you know, lands and parking lots and all the support facilities that they have on the campus precinct. And we're saying a portion of this site, and some of the site wasn't developed, so we have like the Nahina Ravine and other pockets of forested area that haven't been developed yet by the university for the campus needs. And we're saying that in here we want to add a residential population of, say, 10,000 people. So, you know, are we going to do that in one location? Are we going to spread it out? What forms of housing are there going to be? Are there going to be schools? Are there going to be parks? And so on. So that was what was looked at originally. And there was a plan to have a south neighborhood and a east neighborhood, and then a sort of side southwest neighborhood. The south neighborhood and the southwest neighborhood would likely be more town housing kind of form of housing, whereas the east neighborhood would be denser and allow sort of high rise or low form high rise kind of use.
Is that what's going in right now?
Yeah, that's sort of what's up there now. But the question was, is that, you know, what kind of demand was there going to be, and which of the neighborhoods was going to develop first? And so, with respect to the park and the school sites, there was thought that likely there was only going to be need one elementary school site on the mountain, and depending on which neighborhood was developed first, it would dictate where that school went, and then the park component in that site would change depending on whether there had to be a school site had to be accommodated as well at that site between the east neighborhood or the south. So there was some scenarios that were set out as far as the park and the school sites were concerned, depending on which neighborhood developed first. And so that was set out in the plan, but the design of the plan, the other guidelines that were set in that plan dictated the form of the road structure, how the servicing would be managed, and from the environmental, like stormwater management. And the idea was is that let's be a good example, and let's try to create a sustainable, environmentally sustainable community up here on the mountain. It's sort of a separate precinct from the rest of the city, and let's try to develop it in a manner that respects, environmental, principles of a certain kind. So those were all sort of set out in that memorandum of understanding when the land transfer happened, and allowed and the OCP was part of that, memorandum of understanding. And so all of the way that the OCP was formed and how the rezoning requirements and all those principles were set in that community plan. And so when eventually they went to start the first, groundbreaking subdivision, they decided to go with the East neighborhood first, which would be the higher density neighborhood, because they felt that the other support services, like the grocery store and all those other things, couldn't happen, or would likely not happen from a market economy kind of side of things, without the denser neighborhood in place. And so that sort of dictated that they went that way. So the design of the community and all the streets and the way that the water percolates into the storm system. The roads were designed narrower without the same kind of, with the permeable surfaces and, all those sort of sustainable kind of environmental goals Burning Mountain Preservation Society and the others that you mentioned,
yes,
would be part of that sort of discussion and process as the OCP was created.
Through those
public hearings and so on, they would have had input, and they would have seen that there was this desire both on the city's part and the agreement of the university to follow those principles. And so I think that that's why it became acceptable to those groups, or that you got the comments that you
I wanted to ask also is that why an official community plan? Was it a bit of a PR move, or was it to actually develop or have some kind of structure so that the city and SFU could work together? Was that
I wouldn't put it as, it's certainly not a PR thing.
No.
And it certainly wasn't something that, was just deliberate for the city and the university to work together. I think what it did was it addressed, you mentioned earlier, how the university was challenged financially, and that they were looking for their lands to be able to be utilized in a way that they could create the endowment fund or get some money for the university use and so on. And so they wanted to be able to do that, but the city didn't want them to do that in the lands outside the ring road. They wanted to control how that happened, and they wanted these lands to be parkland. And so as part of that negotiated agreement with the province and so on the table was that ability for the university to achieve what they were looking for as well. And so that was the introduction of the market housing. And then the other component was this, that there was a creation of a different type of zoning category, which I think the P11E district. Anyway, it allowed for the type of housing to allow secondary suites. So when they were designed and built, there could be separate entrances to a suite within the unit that could then be used by a student. So you could have a family living there, and they could have a secondary suite that allowed a student to use it, or somebody that was teaching at the university, or vice versa. A teacher could go buy up there and have a suite.
I guess I'm still wondering why an official community plan. Why that approach? Was there any other alternative?
That's basically, you know, the form that the city takes. And I'm not a city planner per se. I'm involved in park planning, but you know, that is basically the form that our sort of structure takes place in the city for land use designation, and then managing development and zoning and land use. So the official community plan, there's the official community plan for the city, which actually is a requirement. Each city has to have one, right? And they are asked to be updated from time to time and so on. There are town center plans in Burnaby, and there's some urban village plans, and there's some community plans, smaller community plans, but certainly not every area of the city has a community plan governing it, right? But where you get a little bit more of a complex mix of uses, some kind of community plan that sets out the structure of that, what the goal is for the land use, and then it guides development and applications to rezone and so on. Okay. So it sets the structure. Right. So it's basically the format and the mechanism that's used elsewhere in the city. So it doesn't make sense to go with another type of process.
Right. So the
for this. Right. It basically takes what occurs elsewhere in the city and says that if you're going to develop the lands up here, then we want to, you know, follow a similar process that we do for the rest of the city to manage that development and to know up front what's planned for the community and what kind of servicing is needed and make sure all these things are provided. Because, you know, if the university just decided to do what they wanted, they may not provide all the things that should be provided to municipal citizens, right? And so this community plan process sets the parameters, and everybody knows what the goals are and what the guidelines are and what the restrictions are, and then they can then proceed from there.
So it really was a compromise.
Yeah.
The city, it was acknowledged the city had control over planning, and the SFU got to do its market housing.
Mm-hmm. So we got that.